Morning. Morning. Just for record purposes, good morning, the chief just, the matter, next up for oral argument is Bohash versus Benish, is that how you say that, Benish Services? Benish Services, I beg your pardon. The chief justice is recused, Justice Stacy is recused, the court has been joined by District Judges Carson and Butler, thank you very much. Counsel, is there any splitting of time, or is it just 10 and 10?
Yes, Your Honor, Joe Ben Wasser on behalf of the appellant, seated at my left is Karen Bohash.
Okay, thank you very much, and you're on your own.
I'm on my own.
Okay, thank you very much, evidently 10 minutes apiece. You may approach. Thank you.
May it please the court, Your Honor. My name is Joe Ben Wasser. I am the attorney for the appellant, which is the estate of Marlene Benish. I would like to reserve the customary 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. Just as a precursor to the court, because I know we do have some new members present, this is actually the second appeal of this particular case. Earlier this January, the Supreme Court rendered an opinion principally focusing on the issue of the district court's application of discounts under the election to purchase statutes in the judicial dissolution section of the Model Business Corporation Act codes in Nebraska revised statutes. In that court, or in that case, excuse me, the Supreme Court overturned the lower court's decision and the application of discounts. Ultimately, then, the court rendered a decision in this case. That decision not only vacated or overturned the judgment amount that the discounts applied to, but also the terms and conditions or the payments associated with that particular judgment amount. More specific.
Was the focus on recalculating in the method, is that right?
Your Honor, I believe my interpretation was that there were two things we had to deal with. One being the amount and having to take out the discounts that were being applied. The second thing being a reassessment of the terms and conditions associated with that. I think the court specifically, its language said, to quote, determine the terms and condition of the purchase, which may include payment of the purchase price in installments with or without interest. So I think the question, Your Honor, then to the district court is, do those payment terms change? Is there a lump sum payment? Are there payment schedules being provided? Should that payment be with or without interest? It is our position that ultimately then when the district court rendered its decision on remand in March 31st of this year, that it abused its discretion on that secondary issue, not of the recalculation, but as it relates to the payment plan. Because in that decision, the court determined, one, that there would be a $250,000 payment against that roughly $4.1 million judgment that was going to be rendered for this year, and to allow Benish Service Company to enter or tender annual payments on May 1st of each year thereafter through the year 2026. We believe that that decision was not supported by the record. There's no explanation within the lower court's decision as to the underlying basis or reasoning for the determination of that payment plan, and in particular, not allocating any interest. There's no discussion about what the necessities that led to that decision were or the balancing of the equities.
There was no interest ordered in the first order on appeal, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And we said we found no abuse of discretion with respect to that initial order.
That is correct, Your
Honor. So how do we find an abuse of discretion here if there was no abuse of discretion found in the first appeal? What changed?
Yes, Your Honor. What I had expected and argued to the lower court was that there would be two things that changed. One being the substantial increase in the judgment amount. We went from a roughly $2.8 million judgment or valuation to an approximately $4.1 million judgment. It was our argument that that creates a heightened risk to my client of inflationary risks and factors that would create a burden to my client by not allowing for interest on a valuation that was set in September of 2018, and ultimately large payments that wouldn't be tendered until some 8 years later in 2026. And we argued that substantial increase ought to give the court pause and reconsideration as to the issue of interest and those inflationary risks. The second thing that we argued to the lower court is that ultimately one part of your earlier decision in January was to correct the court's overarching view of this case. If you recall, one of the things that the court did in its lower decision was argue that part of the reason for the discounting and those sort of considerations were the fact that it didn't view that we had proven that we were the oppressed party in the case and or that somehow that we were an appropriate dissenter. This court properly in its order indicated that, well, when an election, a purchase happens, understandably that evidence doesn't get to the court. And that the court in that case should have applied, I think the language you used is principles of equity, in an effort to avoid, and this is your January opinion's language, encouraging majority oppression, which could double penalize minority interest holders who choose to exercise their rights to petition for dissolution when they feel the majority has engaged in oppressive conduct.
This was in the section of the opinion dealing with whether discounts ought to apply.
Correct? That's correct, Your Honor. And so one of the arguments we made to the lower court is that the court needs to understand, as a very broad matter, that when determining whether or not a payment plan should be issued, this is a somewhat unique situation because we are in the dissenters' rights statutes, which don't allow for just very generically applying for or approving payment plans. Specifically, Nebraska Revised Statute 21-2201, subsection E, says that the court may include payment of the purchase price installments, and very crucially, that statute goes on to say where necessary in the interest of equity. So I think there had to be some finding or determination first of a degree of a necessity. And what does the record support as it pertains to whether or not it was necessary to give then a service corporation ample time to pay that particular valuation?
Take no issue, though, with the court's installment schedule. It seems that the primary issue now is whether or not the court properly discounted that first year payment. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor. The only language that I could find or discussion about the issue of payment plans or otherwise, because it wasn't included in the election to purchase, and there wasn't any substantive request or discussion made in the underlying trial court proceedings, was a very short blurb when President Chris Benish was being discussed or questioned on the issue. And he talked about the idea of this particular type of corporation needed to be well capitalized and it not having that cash on hand and it needing 3 to 5 years in an effort to be able to pay that. Doesn't ask for no interest to be applied, but we took it then to put our best foot forward that there is some evidence talking about 3 to 5 years as being necessary in order to remain well capitalized and to make those payments, but there's nothing to support why it couldn't afford to pay interest. Or particularly, there's nothing in the record to support this weighing of interest, which I think is required for the district court to render that decision, particularly because if
you... Which decision? The decision to order installment payments or the decision to award equity or interest or both?
For purposes of this appeal, just the interest issue, Your Honor. We are conceding that the payment plan arguably is equitable in its nature. There's a little bit of language there. It's understandable that if you don't have cash on hand, you would have to sell assets in order to come up with that cash.
If I could follow up, your argument then is because there's an installment plan over time, it necessarily follows there should be interest?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because you're not getting it all together in hand at this moment or something like that.
Correct, Your Honor. I think that, I think there needs to be a weighing of interest. The Link versus LSI case, which is a South Dakota Supreme Court case, this court referenced in the Wayne L. Ryan judicial dissolution case last year, talks about that issue and the issue of how that standard should be reviewed by the court in the weighing of the interest and the burden that my client has when they're not receiving monies immediately. But then also I think the record overall supports that we had a $17 million of unencumbered land, $12 million of equipment with a $2.5 million floor plan is the only liability against it. We have over $20 million annualized of gross sales of chemicals, parts, and equipment. We had a $750,000 loan that this excess cash sitting in the corporation the year before we filed this petition.
All of this would have been in the record at the time of the first appeal, where we found no abuse of discretion.
That's correct, Your Honor.
How do we get around that?
Your Honor, I think that in part, I think what needs to happen and what I had argued is that the original underlying district court didn't do the proper look to see if there is a showing of necessity, which the statute requires, and the weighing of interest. I think it was one part of a very large case, of course, as part of that overall thing. And I think if you look at the record, if there were something substantively where we could say that it was asked for, it was argued, there's some economic condition or something that would support there being no interest, then arguably I think there would be grounds for to be within the judge's discretion, but the evidence simply doesn't exist.
Counsel,
in this case,
before your time completely expires, I want to talk to you about the corporate statute talks about interest in subparagraph E. Interest may be allowed, and then it goes on to say, at the rate specified in section 45-104, you would agree, would you not, that the rate specified in section 45-104 is 12% per annum, correct?
That is correct. Correct,
so if the district court felt that that rate was inequitable, it didn't have the option of saying, oh, I'm going to set the interest at 5%, or I'm going to set the interest at 2%. Its choice was interest at 12% or no interest at all, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So don't we have to look at that as the framework for determining whether there was an abuse of discretion in determining that there be no interest?
Certainly, Your Honor. And if there were evidence that, based on the question of necessity or based on the weighing of interest, that the corporation didn't have the authority, didn't have the cash flow or the ability to tender payment with the 12% interest, then that would be one consideration that would be appropriate for the court to take into that decision. Again, it's our evidence, though, that we have very, very little encumbrances or loans against the balance of the assets. We have extremely high cash flow, in excess of $20 million a year. And just bluntly, Your Honor, it wasn't argued or even made apparent to the court in the underlying proceedings, during the trial proceedings, or discussed in any legitimate detail.
Thank you.
With Judge Miller-Lerman's indulgence, I have one more question.
Yes.
You referred to making a concession with respect to the payment plan, and I want to just clarify what that concession is. Are you conceding that assignment of error entirely, or were you narrowing the argument? What is your argument on appeal with respect to the changing of the payment plan?
Yes, Your Honor. If you recall from the earlier decision, we actually, as one of the assignments of error, argued that allowing any payment plan in its form was improper at that time. This time around, what we are trying to do is try to narrow the scope of our appeal and argue that the most egregious portion of that decision relates to the lack or failure to apply interest, particularly to account for the inequities and the interest issue. I think obviously we all know what's happened in the economy in the last year and a half, and it's made ever present the fact that
your brief does have an assignment of error arguing that the court abused its discretion in its payment plan, the $250,000 for the first year. Are you abandoning that on appeal?
No, okay, Your Honor. Our point there is simply that the original award had a collective payment 21 and 22 of $1.125 million. The amended judgment or order on remand reduced that payment by $325,000, thus exacerbating the problem we have here, which is backloading the payments my client's going to receive, subjecting those monies to greater risks of inflationary considerations. And we still make that argument, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. How long did we go over with appellant, please?
3 minutes, 11 seconds.
Let's add 3 minutes to your time, please. Good morning. I beg your pardon?
3 minutes, even?
Yes, thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court,
Sheila Benson of Rembolt Ludke on behalf of Appley Benish Service Company. As I think has been highlighted through the questioning here this morning, our position in this case is really quite simple and straightforward, and it's that this court has already decided this exact issue in its earlier opinion in this matter as it relates to the installment payments and interest, and that should and must control the disposition of the current appeal.
If that's true, then why did we say with or without interest?
You remanded because the court in its earlier decision said interest is not required, Judge, in looking at this $2 million sum judgment, your five-year payment plan, no interest, you did not abuse your discretion. And the court went on and said, even though there was an abuse of discretion, we recognize we just increased that judgment amount and we're increasing those payment amounts. So, Judge, again, you have the discretion. You can look at this again, and if you think these installment payments need to be less years, more years, if you think that 12% interest comes in, you can revisit that. The court did exactly what she did the first time. She looked at those issues based on her knowledge and having heard the trial of this case. She again applied 5 years and no interest. And so I should say the same reasoning that this court applied in the first appeal in finding no abuse of discretion, I believe, is dispositive in finding that there's no abuse of discretion this time.
Counsel, let me ask you about the type of interest that the statutes envision. If you look at 45-104, that's the statute that's referenced there. Isn't that a pre-judgment interest statute as opposed to a post-judgment interest statute?
Yes, it is. It's typical in contract cases where you don't have a contract rate specified. You can plead that, and then from your date of breach, it runs on a pre-judgment. But the Model Business Corporation Act makes reference to that specific amount. And so, in effect, I believe how that statute comes into place is it acts kind of as a post-judgment rate, but it's defined by that statute. So it supplants the default judgment interest. And here I think it's also important to note the court didn't say no interest ever for all time. She said you got your 5 years to make these pretty steep payments, $825,000 a year. But if you don't make that final payment in April of 2026, then the 12% rate is going to kick in. And so she... Clearly, the court looked at these issues, considered the impact of the interest on the statute, and the same as she did the first time, she applied that rate would kick in to the extent my client's default on the payment, that rate in the schedule is going to kick in.
And I presume your position would be that that was appropriate under the statute, even though that sounds like post-judgment interest
as opposed to
pre-judgment.
Yeah, I think because of the specific statute language at issue here, the court had no choice but to deal with it that way. I think that does control, and so I think she appropriately handled that. And I think, again, this court's prior decision in this case saying, you know, that Section 21-2201E provides that the court, in setting the terms of purchase, may include both installment payments and interest, but that neither is required. Lower courts, you have the discretion to decide that. The first time the court exercised her discretion and said, we're going to do installment payments. We're not going to require interest. This court said that was an appropriate exercise of discretion.
You would agree that there is a difference in the sense that the amount went from $2 million to $4 million plus.
Yes, absolutely.
Why isn't that a controlling change?
I would argue that increase in payment makes it even... It increases the burden on my clients because now they're paying an extra $300,000 a year. So the argument is just as plausible that to make a stronger argument that interest shouldn't be required because that would make them pay even more than if we would have applied interest the first time. And these are all the factual types of issues that the court, having heard a 3-4 day bench trial intimately involving the financial condition of this company, was in the best position to decide whether or not interest was appropriate. And she exercised that discretion based upon having presided over that trial, and it's the same discretion that this court has previously affirmed. And I do want to touch on the other assignment of error that was alluded to at the end of appellant's argument, asserting that this reduction in the first payment was an error. And I think this is set forth in our brief, but just to provide some context, while the first appeal was pending, my clients made that first installment payment. At that time, that installment payment was $525,000. This court looked at it, said, we're not going to do marketability and minority discounts that necessarily increase the judgment amount. Dividing it by five, our payment went from $575 to $825. At the hearing on remand, the parties stipulated that that $250,000, that $575,000 had been paid, and I would direct this court to page 5 of the Bill of Exceptions, which is necessarily quite brief in this matter. And after the parties stipulated and agreed that $575,000 had been paid, the court said, okay, so the court will consider, by stipulation of the parties, there's already been a payment toward the judgment that was previously entered in making a payment plan. Following that comment, there was no objection by appellant to the court saying, we're going to factor this in when I'm looking at the payment plan. There was no request that it be taken off the top as opposed to the first payment.
So is your position that argument is waived?
Not, my position is not that the argument is waived, but I think my position, for instance, in appellant's opening brief, they say that there was no testimony or evidence given to the court to support the reduction in that first payment. And I think that's just false based on the record we have and the stipulation of the party, that the very logical reason the court reduced the first installment amount was that my client had paid part of that first payment already, and we have to find a way to credit that in some manner.
At the time the $575 was paid, it was appropriate given the process of the case.
Correct, because that would have come due while the appeal was pending, and they didn't want to risk being in default, they didn't want to risk interest, all those sorts of things. So to preserve their rights, they paid that, it was accepted.
They were making facts.
Yes. So it was paid, but they received $500,000, so we have to figure out, it's got to come from somewhere. And again, this, I think, goes to the judge's discretion. She probably could have taken it off the top and then created installment payments, but since it was paid voluntarily, she applied in that first payment, and that's why we get from $825,000 to $250,000. And so we simply contend that just like she appropriately exercised her discretion, and again, doing installment payments without interest, she likewise appropriately exercised her discretion and reducing
that. So there's a lot of moving pieces in your view.
As it relates to, some of the
adding everything up, right, in terms of the outcome.
Right, there in terms of the mechanics, but again, I think the judge, she followed this court's order on remand. She appropriately adjusted the judgment amount. She applied her discretion. I think she took the direction from this court's opinion, which upheld her prior procedure. She did the same procedure that was previously upheld, and we would respectfully ask that the court would again affirm that decision and find that there was no abuse of discretion. And unless there are further unless there are further questions, I would yield the rest of my time.
Questions from the bench? Are we set?
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. We went over, so there is no time for appellant. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thanks very much. You all are excused. That concludes arguments. Thank you.